Peter B. Collins, News and Comment on Tuesday, August 7th.
Hello, NSA.
I know you're out there.
I just called you to say.
And I know you're listening.
I love you.
I love you.
Because you really listen.
Our in-depth interview posted today at peterbcollins.com is a blockbuster with Diane Rourke, former House Intelligence Committee staffer. For 5 years, she was in charge of oversight of the NSA, the National Security Administration, at the very time that they initiated the illegal wiretapping program. Now, it's always softened up, euphemized as warrantless wiretapping. And prior to 2008, warrantless wiretapping was a crime. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. The FISA law that was created in the wake of Watergate explicitly created the standard of this FISA court where you could get a warrant even if you showed up drunk. As a law enforcement officer, they have rarely denied a request for a wiretap approval. Yet the government went into this incredible, massive surveillance program. And here I'd like you to listen to Diane Rourke, who is now the subject of retaliation, and she's suing the government to get her reputation back and a computer and some papers, too. And I found it remarkable to talk with her. We covered a lot of ground. And here, toward the end of the interview, she shared with us her own distress at a former House intelligence staffer, somebody with some of the highest clearances, a person who has never leaked, she says, any classified information, yet her reputation was smeared as they attempted to prosecute Thomas Drake, a whistleblower at the NSA, who, like Diane Rourke, complained about the massive waste of money on a program called Trailblazer, that was the darling of the leadership of the NSA. It cost billions of dollars, $3 to $4 billion, and perhaps more. It didn't work effectively, and it didn't have the protections for American citizens and our constitutional rights that were built into the $3 million program that did work, called Thin Thread. Here's Diane Rourke.
I feel it's very unjust. That's why I am suing. But the larger reason I'm suing is to, as I said, to make sure this doesn't happen to other people, that they can't get by with these things. I just felt I was doing my job. I didn't feel I was a whistleblower. And I just felt I had to do my job. My job was oversight. It included making sure that their budget, you know, that their funds were being spent properly, and also that they were not exceeding the laws operationally. So it was my job to do this. Also, I had funded part of the technology that they used. I can't say I'd funded it by myself, but I had argued for it in Congress. It was ads that were added to their budget, and I felt morally, you know, I felt I had to do this because I was morally responsible for part of it, and I did not realize that I was a target for the longest time. It just escaped my, I just couldn't believe it. For one thing, if with regard to warrantless wiretaps, if they thought that I was leaking after I went to everybody I could think of to object to it, wouldn't that have been pretty stupid of me? Yes, it's very disconcerting. Another reason they went after me, in addition to my efforts in my job, was that after I retired, the five of us who were raided, which included Tom Drake, Bill Binney, Ed Loomis, Kirk Wiebe, the five of us helped both instigated and helped the Inspector General of the Department of Defense to investigate the modernization program at NSA that was wasting billions of dollars. And the report came back that was, as I am told, devastating against NSA. And even then, they didn't stop their program, but eventually they had to halt it years later after wasting billions more. So they were always angry about that, and I think that led them to retaliate against all of us.
And to what extent do you believe that this retaliation is driven by embarrassment as opposed to any realistic breach of security clearance or violation of the law?
100%. It is very clear. It came out in the Drake trial. There were pretrial hearings in the Drake trial, and both those hearings and the fact that Drake continued to refuse to plea bargain forced them to drop the case, because as it turned out, they had no evidence. They had no evidence that either of us had leaked warrantless wiretaps, and so they went after us for talking to the Baltimore Sun. And I had talked to Siobhan Gorman of the Baltimore Sun about two articles she wrote, one on the modernization program and one on Thin Thread. And but we never, neither of us ever said anything classified.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turned out, the government admitted that none of the Sun articles were classified. They admitted that there was nothing ever published that was classified. And most people don't realize that. So they had nothing. They had no evidence whatsoever.
I hope you'll listen to the full interview with Diane Rourke. It's for subscribers right now at peterbcollins.com. And if you haven't subscribed yet, do you know about our 24-hour pass? For just $1, go into the subscription page at peterbcollins.com, and you can take out a 24-hour pass to hear the Diane Rourke interview and anything else that is restricted to subscribers. So they're, you know, for a buck, come on, there's no barrier here. And of course, I would appreciate it if you sign up for a $5 monthly subscription or the $50 annual, which is the best deal. And $50 subscribers get a copy of Hank Albarelli's powerful book about the CIA called A Terrible Mistake, and he will personally sign it for you. I hope you'll subscribe at peterbcollins.com, and I could really use your support. Now, speaking of Thomas Drake and the NSA, I was kind of floored because I spoke to Diane Rourke yesterday on Monday, August 6th, and on Monday night's Daily Show with Jon Stewart, there was an interview with Thomas Drake. Now, I'm about to play you selected excerpts because Jason Jones, in Daily Show style, cheesed it up, and I think wasted a lot of time on his own fantasy about being a spy. But I snipped out most of the cheese, and here you can hear his commentary about Thomas Drake and how he should be treated as a hero and instead was tried under the Espionage Act. Here's that clip from The Daily Show.
Did the Obama administration leak certain flattering information? I highly think yes. And I will say this, too. On the flip side, when it's information the Obama administration know likey, they've been sons of bitches on government whistleblowers. In fact, our own Jason Jones has more.
We hear a lot of stories about government waste, but there are individuals out there fighting for the taxpayer, like former National Security Agency analyst Thomas Drake.
When I was employed at the NSA, one of my responsibilities was to discover the very best that existed at NSA and put it into the fight. And one of those programs was Thin Thread.
Thin Thread was an efficient $4 million intelligence gathering program. The problem was the NSA already had a program called Trailblazer that didn't quite work, spied on Americans, and was a tiny bit more expensive.
A $3 million program made a $4 billion program look pretty bad.
And after he showed his superiors how much money they could save by implementing Thin Thread, he received the government's highest honor.
I was charged as a spy.
You misspoke.
I was charged under the Espionage Act for blowing the whistle on massive fraud, waste, abuse, and illegalities committed by the U.S. government.
Whoa!
Thin Thread was a program developed with just a few million dollars. And yet, they shut down the program because it's too effective. It severely embarrassed them.
So what did you do about it?
I brought Thin Thread to my reporting official. He said, "You don't want to ask any more questions, Mr. Drake. Leave it alone." I went to the far ends of NSA to find the truth. I took up the banner for Thin Thread. Well, I was not going to remain silent. I make a fateful decision to contact a reporter at the Baltimore Sun.
So how did you get the secrets out of the NSA? Microscopic dot on your shoe? Hollow esophagus?
Using a very secure email system.
You used your email.
And I share with her information revealing publicly for the first time not only the existence of a program called Thin Thread, but massive fraud, waste, and abuse.
This desk jockey also revealed that an internal test of ThinThread discovered information in NSA's own database that might have actually stopped 9/11.
I was an American and took an oath to defend the Constitution. Not criminal to have contact with a reporter.
But according to the government, it is. So they arrested him.
Here I am facing the prospect of a public trial in which, if I were found guilty, I would essentially spend the rest of my natural life in prison.
But when the media started publicizing Drake's case and the NSA's incompetence became public, it was clear that the 10 felony counts were utter bullshit. But the government still managed to get him to plead to the most damning charge they could muster.
To exceeding authorized use of a computer. They've criminalized First Amendment activities. They've criminalized the exposure of criminal activity conducted at the highest levels of our own government.
And one other item from my television viewing on Monday evening, and I don't want to make this a parade of audio clips from TV shows, so I'll let you go find it for yourself if you're so inclined. But I've been pretty tough on Rachel Maddow and the team of hosts at what I call MSDNC, because it's become a kind of ugly, extreme flip side of the Fox News channel, where they're really just pandering to Democrats. Maddow shows a lot of opposition research and gotcha stuff about Mitt Romney. And there's so many important issues, like, say, the Thomas Drake case and the NSA's wiretapping program, that never even get mentioned on MSDNC. So since I've been slapping Rachel around figuratively, I don't slap anybody literally, I wanted to share with you a story that she broadcast last night, because it was a break from the Democratic cheerleading. She took on Harry Reid and his undocumented charges that Mitt Romney may not have paid taxes for as long as 10 years. And I give her a lot of credit. John Stewart has also taken on Harry Reid and said that, gosh, if you don't have any proof, you ought to just keep your mouth shut. And as Saint Ronnie once said,
I believe that if you can't say something nice about a person, you shouldn't say anything at all.
Now, it remains to be seen whether this will shame Mitt Romney into releasing more of his tax returns, as many as 10 years or 12 years, I don't know. I think that the issue of what Romney is hiding is important. But I also, just to be fair, have to say that what Harry Reid is doing is not fair. And perhaps the truth will come out and he will be vindicated. But at this point, he is kind of swinging wildly. And Maddow did a great job of showing how Harry Reid, who is a former pugilist, a boxer, by the way, has amped up some of his dramatic commentary, and in particular, expressions of his anger at Republicans in recent months. So we'll have to see whether the truth comes out and Harry Reid does know about Mitt Romney's taxes more than we're being told. But at this point, I have to say that he is out on a limb and sawing feverishly. Now, speaking of the Mitster, he has launched a new round of class warfare. And I find this so amazing because a few years back, Meg Whitman, who's now running HP, tried to buy the governorship here in California. She spent $160 million, mostly on bad television commercials. And she seemed oblivious to the perception of her as a rich person. And one of the things that she offered was she wanted to put more money into the University of California. That's great. But she wanted to take it from welfare programs. Not so great. Well, here's the Mitster running from his tax returns, talking about how we need to free up business in this country and how we can't tax the wealthy. And he's launched a new attack on welfare families during the middle of the worst recession, and it really is a depression if you're on welfare, since the 1930s. And the tone-deaf nature of this, with a guy whose wife has a couple of Cadillacs and he's got the home in La Jolla with the automotive elevator, for him to try to say that Obama is allowing state governors waivers of the Clinton-era welfare reforms, and that if Romney is elected, he says, if I'm president, I'll put work back in welfare. And it's so cruel. Nobody wants to be on welfare. Sure, there are some schlubs, some losers, some low-life people who will take whatever they can get. But that's not the general picture of a welfare recipient. And what's interesting is that as governor of Massachusetts, Mitt Romney asked for waivers from the Clinton welfare reform. And Kathleen Sebelius, who runs Health and Human Services, secretary of it, wrote a letter to a Republican congressman from Michigan, Dave Camp, and said that to qualify for a waiver, a state's governor has to guarantee at least 20% more people have to move from welfare to work compared with that state's past performance. So it's not just a free ride when they hand out these waivers. It's really pretty ridiculous. And the other thing that's interesting in my inbox today related to these kind of misguided campaign messages is a pro-Romney message that is being paid for by a Christian evangelical political operation called American Principles in Action. Now, they're based in D.C., but they fund a phony front group called Nevada Hispanics. And Nevada Hispanics will start running a TV commercial tomorrow in Nevada, claiming that President Obama is the deporter in chief. It says, don't be fooled by President Obama's words. He's not committed to immigrants. He only wants our vote. And it asks, why didn't he keep his promise to pursue immigration reform? Instead, he has deported more people than any other president in this country's history. Now, this is a real minefield to begin with. We have a right-wing group pumping money into a nominally Latino group that is then pushing this idea that Obama is a tough guy on immigrants and has deported a lot of people. Now, it's true. Obama has deported more people than Bush did, than Clinton did. And yet, for imposing his own version of the DREAM Act through an executive order, he's whipsawed on the other extreme as being an amnesty president for a group of individuals who came here as children and have, you know, done all the right things. Many of them have been in the military, and he wants to grant them some sort of resident status. And that, of course, is amnesty, can't happen. So Obama is getting hit from both sides by Republicans, and it shows just how desperate they are and what kind of games they play. They won't have a consistent message just of saying he's a pro-amnesty president, yada, yada, yada. They let the right-wingers hit him on that side, and then they find a phony Latino front group to hit him from the left. Ouch. Now, can I take a moment in between talk about Mitt Romney's tax returns and tell you a sorry-ass story about myself and the IRS? I just got off the phone with Mr. Kelsey, who's at an IRS office in Nevada. And this is the culmination of 4 months of bullshit. So, I have a few stocks and mutual funds. They're in an account managed by the Charles Schwab brokerage company. Every year in January, I get a statement from them, and it tells me what was bought, what was sold, and if I made a profit, how to report that on Schedule D, and pay tax on it. I do my own taxes. Every year, I get the form from Schwab, I put it on Schedule D, I pay the taxes I owe. And the last 2 years in a row, right around April 1st, as I'm in the middle of all the mess of doing this year's taxes, I get hit with a demand from the tax folks to provide documentation from 2 years prior about the stock sales that took place. And this year, right around April 1st, I get this notice that says I am being billed for $6,600 from the tax year 2010. And I've been through this before. I know it's bogus. So I first finish my returns, and then I get around to dealing with this old matter. And I have to go to Schwab and get all this kind of data on, you know, what was bought, what was sold, and what we paid for, what we sold it for. And so the tax bill for $6,600, after I send in the forms and go through all of these hoops, my tax bill is $30. With interest, $31.35. This is a colossal waste of my time and Mr. Kelsey and all those other people at the IRS. And it's something that very simply could be straightened out if the IRS just emailed the folks at Charles Schwab and said, give us the information from Peter's account. I'll release all my tax returns. You can see them for the last 30 years if you want. Oh, boy. Hey, let's hit Mitt Romney and corporate America one more time here today. Because a report from the Justice Department indicates that pharmaceutical companies, military contractors, banks, and other corporations have been assessed $8 billion related to charges of defrauding the government. And guess what? No individuals will be held accountable. That's right, $8 billion in fines and settlement money. And we'll detail a couple of them for you in a moment. And it's all just a big whoops. Remember the Enron reforms that said that a CEO had to personally sign the filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission each year, the annual statements, under penalty of law? Well, these corporations can routinely defraud the government, break the law, and it's just a cost of doing business. For example, the drug giant GlaxoSmithKline has agreed to pay a $3 billion fine to settle criminal and civil accusations of drug marketing and pricing fraud. Have you heard of any GlaxoSmithKline executives being hauled up on charges of criminal drug marketing and pricing fraud? Nah. They wear white collars and nice suits. In April, the military contractor ATK Launch Systems, agreed to pay $37 million in a settlement for selling dangerous and defective flares. The Merck Drug Company settled charges of drug marketing and safety fraud for $950 million. Oracle, the software giant, agreed to pay about $200 million after being accused of overbilling the government. And Mitt Romney calls for the repeal of Dodd-Frank, the watered-down re-regulation of banksters and Wall Street, and it barely touches on the hedge fund operators and all those derivatives. And as we reported recently, 79% of the elements in Dodd-Frank remain unenforced, mostly blocked by high-priced lobbyists. And who pays them? The same people who we want to see some regulation on, and Mitt Romney wants to free of red tape and job-killing government regulations. And yesterday, we talked about Cass Sunstein, Obama's old pal from Harvard in the White House, who was there watering down regulations to please various business constituencies. Just amazing. Now, the violence that broke out on Sunday at the Sikh temple in Wisconsin, some people say Sikh and some people say Sikh, and I'll go either way, has been described by some as an act of domestic terrorism. And I'm a little uncomfortable with that because this appears to me to be a hate-filled, enraged gunman. And when you invoke the term terrorism, it kicks in the Patriot Act, Department of Homeland Security, and under the NDAA that we've talked much about that was passed at the end of last year, if it's called terrorism, all kinds of extreme protocols kick in, where a suspect can be held without trial or charge at a military base indefinitely. Now, this suspect killed himself, or he died in a crossfire with the cops. So we don't have to concern ourselves with that aspect of it. But go back to 2009, Janet Napolitano had just left the governorship of Arizona, which was a big mistake, handed it off to Jan Brewer, and took over Homeland Security. I'm not her biggest fan, but one of the things she did was release a report called Right-Wing Extremism, Current Economic and Political Climate Fueling Resurgence in Radicalization and Recruitment. And it named white supremacists, thank you, as one of the key focal points. We know that the gunman in Wisconsin was monitored for years by the people who watch hate mongers at the Southern Poverty Law Center. But when Janet Napolitano released that report, John Boehner and the Republicans demanded apologies, demanded that they withdraw this allegation that it's white people with guns who are the biggest threat to American public safety. Boehner, the Secretary of Homeland Security, owes the American people an explanation for why she has abandoned using the term terrorists to describe those such as Al-Qaeda who are plotting overseas to kill innocent Americans, while her department is using the same term to describe American citizens who disagree with the direction Washington Democrats are taking our nation. No. She didn't describe terrorists to use the term terrorist to describe people who just have a different view of the direction of our government. She described people who were committed to extreme positions and violent support for them. And so we'll be watching to see if this term comes up again about domestic terrorism related to the attack on the Sikh temple. But keep in mind that the Obama administration had identified this threat, and Republicans said, oh, no, forget about that. Today is primary day in Missouri, Michigan, Washington, and Kansas. Be interesting to see who Senator Claire McCaskill draws as an opponent in Missouri. She's trying to pick her opponent, stay away from a Tea Party woman named Sarah Steelman, who's been endorsed by Sarah Palin. And she's hoping to get a chump named Congressman Todd Akin. And the Democrats have spent about $2 million trying to bolster the candidacy of Akin because he is perceived as the weak one who McCaskill can easily beat. Also in Missouri, a legacy contest, the son of the late Governor Mel Carnahan, Russ, is a congressman. He was redrawn into a district with a Democrat named Lacey Clay. They're slugging it out, and we'll see who prevails there. Over in Michigan, Debbie Stabenow, the Democrat, is unopposed, but her challengers include Congressman Pete Hoekstra, who lives up to the hoke part of his name. He is a really hokey guy. And then there is Clark Durant, a lawyer and the Tea Party guy. And we saw in Texas just last week that a hardline conservative with the support of Rick Perry, the sitting lieutenant governor, was defeated by a Tea Party guy who came, at least in my view, from out of nowhere. So I'll be watching the election returns tonight and tomorrow, and our news and comment will update you on anything important. Thanks for joining me here at PeterBCollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.